you get some people who go around like bragging about, oh, I'm going home soon, and in my head I think, just don't do that. It's quite an insensitive thing to do, because other people are doing different sentences. But also in terms of, when do you start to think about your release? It's like, well, you see people going home every day. So even I remember from being where my cell was, I could hear the gate in the morning. I could hear like the gov saying, well, all the best, or people leaving, or you could hear people laughing, and you'd see them walking. And I remember watching people walk up the walkway thinking, fuck, they're going home, they're actually going to the real world again. And I think when that happens, you start thinking, it's nearly my time, whenever that time is.
Hi, guys.
Hello, Claire, you all right?
Hello.
I'm good. How are you?
Hi, Boats.
Hi, Rob.
I'm going to go straight in with a treat. We've got a treat this week, yeah. Boats, apparently.
You're welcome.
Are you on the edge of your seat?
We have been, I don't know about you, but I have been inundated in the last week or so with requests for the tuna burger recipe we mentioned.
Have you now?
In the last pod, Barry's tuna burgers. And ask and ye shall receive.
Okay. Come on then.
The man himself has delivered. Okay, this feeds 3 to 6 people, depending on how hungry they are. Okay. Drain out 4 tins of tuna. Finely chop a pepper and onion. For full authenticity, turn your plastic knife into a serrated knife with a set of nail clippers. Okay. Then place in a bowl. Can skip that bit. Place in a bowl. Add a tablespoon of dried coriander.
Ground. Okay.
Ground coriander, that's it.
Sorry.
Also mix in a little bit of chili powder,
mm-hmm.
you know, to taste to in terms of heat. Seasoned to taste as well with salt and pepper. Now mix in one whole egg. Okay, mix that all together. Then you can turn that into small patties in your hand. Okay, now separate bowl.
Was that your job, making the patties?
Yeah, I usually got given the shitter jobs. Mm. And also, this was...
No one wants tuna hands in prison.
No, and I hated it. And then you can't get it off. No,
where are you getting gloves from?
I've got loads of rubber gloves knocking around. That's what they had loads of.
That's what people used to wrap their phones in.
We're also going to talk about this. Well,
where are they? On the wing?
Yeah, they have loads in the office. They normally have them. You can ask for them. Well. People, because if you're cleaning your cell, you can get them.
Okay, that makes sense.
So you can wear gloves, so you can request them.
So
the chopping the veg bit was the source of the biggest argument I had with anyone. And I wasn't even really involved, but it was Al and Barry fell out because Al, classic Al, when it came to chopping the veg time, the hard graft, he'd be off playing table tennis down the end of the wing.
Sure.
Rock up. So him and Barry didn't talk for 3 days.
And then criticised the burgers at the end of it.
Anyway, so now you're mixing 6 egg yolks into a bowl, whisk those up, then you dip the burgers in that. You listening? Then,
are you sure about 6 eggs? That seems excessive for a bit of coating.
Don't question Barry's recipe.
I'm not a crazy.
Well, I wouldn't know because we haven't got a taster here.
Pardon? No, you haven't, but you will. That's the next step. Okay. You're then dipping the burgers in, and then you're rolling those into a mixture of either oats or flour with chili powder, then fry in oil. And they were outstanding. You'll take my word for it for now, and I'll sort out some tasters.
I think
we'll do some tuna burger
sliders
for the last recording we did. We'll have a little party, shall we, on the last episode?
That would
tuna
be
burger sliders.
Super cute.
Some hooch. We'll make some hooch. We'll go all out.
Our prison.
You leave the catering to me in Boats. Yeah, you just turn up, Claire. Okay.
I can't wait.
We'll give you the full experience. It'll be like the World
Cup,
Barry. In Rochi on H Wing. Party time.
That sounds great. Next week, Boats, you've got to bring something to the table.
Yeah, you've got to bring something.
I'll never think.
Barry's out, so I'll have a word with him. We'll see if we can maybe get him in to visit in person. He can be like the Gino DeCampo on This Morning. We can get Barry in to do that because he's a fantastic chef. But I tell you what, he's a better gas engineer. Barry is out. And if you are in the greater Kent area and your boiler needs servicing, I cannot think of a better man for the job. Okay, he's a bloody good bloke. He's handsome. And he's quite simply one of the top gas engineers in the southeast of England. So at Barry Chambers, Gas Safe Engineer on all social media platforms.
How do you even know what Greater Kent is? Greater Kent, what's that? Where's Greater Kent?
Because I asked him what areas he covers.
Isn't that where you're from?
Huh? Me?
Yeah.
No, I'm from Berkshire.
Oh.
Originally. Home counties.
You just learned about your local area in Rochester.
Yeah, and then I lived in just outside Tunbridge Wells for 6 months when I was on.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I spent 6 months there.
You
when
were
I was
released
on
to Kent.
I was released to Kent, which leads to all I so love what you've done there, Claire.
With what we're talking about.
That is seamless, that.
Thank you. So busy. It's only taken me eight so episodes
busy
to go.
So busy.
You don't like it, Boats. You prefer...
He's so busy. Rob is so busy.
Right, we're talking about release today. And the process for it. So maybe we should start with some technicalities of...
Get the lingo out there.
Yeah, of when you're released on your sentence, because there's different types of sentences and you're released at different points, depending on what type of sentence. But start with...
Maybe you give us the rundown on this, Claire. You're probably the expert.
Well, you could start with what you're doing and then, you know, I'll talk about others.
Okay. When you first get to jail, maybe a week or so after, under your door, you'll get a slip with telling you your days, telling you how long you're doing, how long your sentence is, when your release date is, which is called a conditional release date, CRD. If you're eligible for an early, which is a HDC, home detention curfew. So we'll have all the dates of that and it'll have like your license date. And obviously the more you look further down, when it will say like, if your license is over in years, it's just going to piss you off. If it says the number of days, say like 1,000 or 2,000.
Weird, they do
days. Yeah, I think it's like 600 and something.
It's horrible.
It looks a lot longer than 2 years, 3 months.
It's horrible because you think those are the actual amount of days I'm doing. And yeah, it's mad. And then if you're eligible for an early, it will say your date. And obviously that's what me and Rob were probably looking more towards.
Because you guys were serving standard determinate sentences.
Yeah.
So you've got determinate sentences like you, where you've got a definite end date, so your sentence end date, and that's like the very end point of the number that you're given by the judge. So if you're given a five-year sentence, that's your sentence end date.
Yeah.
And on a determinate sentence, the default position is you're released at halfway onto license for the second bit.
It's called the custodial half.
You know what's so mad? Like when you get sentenced, if the judge is a busy prick like Rob, if he tells you the amount of time in months, in your head your head's gone anyway and you're trying to do the maths. Like,
right.
So like if you get told like, what was that, 32 months, you start thinking, oh, what's the half of 32? And you start trying to work out the actual months. But obviously at the time, your brain's all over the place. So it's so hard to do the maths. That's just a quick fact.
Oh, I liked it.
Yeah, I was trying
to do the math as you said it, actually, Boats, yeah.
The two most annoying times people do that is judges going, you've got 27 months. And when you ask a new mum how old their kid is, and they go, he's 23 months. He's 2 years old. He's 2 years old.
But what point do they start? But what point?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That is true, though, yeah. Right, so you've got determinate sentence. Default position is you're released halfway, although that can be extended if you'd done something wrong.
Was that like the EDP?
Committed an offence in
No, if you got an adjudication and you got additional days.
Oh, yeah, because they'll give you your slip again with like...
You get additional days and your conditional release date will change. So instead of being released at halfway, it would be halfway plus however many new days you get. But they could never extend it past your sentence end date, which it would be, if we're talking about like 5 years, it would never be past that.
Okay.
That you're always definitely going to be out by then.
Okay. How common is that? How common is it that people get their custodial part of their sentence extended? Do you know any?
I mean...
No, I don't know. Like, I don't know any. We were saying in some places they just want to get you out of the prisons. Like, that's the thing. So like in theory, they can, but in reality, are they just...
So obviously I see it from the other point of view, because if you're up for additional days and you've got an adjudication... You're entitled to a solicitor. So we turn up to those hearings. So, yeah, we see people who get hundreds of extra days added onto their sentence.
Okay. They go, no, that wasn't a loaded question. I don't remember any of the boys we hung out with having that happen to them.
But maybe they might not have had it happen while they were with you, because by the time they're with you, they're in CCAT.
Yeah.
So behaviour's generally quite good. But if you ask them, maybe, I don't know, if you ask them what their release date was, that already might be an amended conditional release date. It might not actually be the halfway point.
But also a mad thing is people were getting their days back. So if you were getting like...
Yeah, you can apply for them to get back.
Yeah, people were getting them back. So that like that was bringing people's release dates earlier.
Forward.
Yeah, because like nearer the time they were able to apply or write letters to the governor.
If you've been 6 months clear,
you can
apply for them to come back. Yeah.
So it's what's good. I think people don't realise that. You actually, like Boat said... really early on, you get told, so you can sort of map it out in that sense. You get told your dates of release or your the potential dates of release. So at the end of your episode one, the eligibility, your eligibility for HDC. So yeah, I was under 4 years, my sentence, so I knew it was that. And pretty much straight away, they're like, oh yeah, you'll get tagged. Because initially, they don't tell you, like, no one tells you what HDC is, really. So you sort of heard of people being untagged, right, and stuff, but no one, going in, you don't know that. So people are like, oh, you'll get that. You don't know whether that's a certainty initially.
And it's not a certainty. Like, the reality is you do have to...
Some people get declined in terms of your address or what they've done, So you're still like, even though everyone's going, yeah, you'll get it, you'll get it. I remember being inside actually and being like, and everyone's like, oh yeah, you'll get tagged. But in my head, I was thinking like, no one tells you the rules on it. So you're just like, oh, maybe they've got to go and assess your house. And I don't know, my house, you don't know what the criteria for that is. So you're still like, there's still that little bit of uncertainty, like, will I, won't I?
Which defeats the point of it if they're trying to incentivize you to be well behaved in order to get out of prison.
But is it more of an incentive, or is it more like to get to free the prisons up? Because as I said, like in Rochester, it's like everyone was getting tagged that was eligible because they were trying to free up space.
I think it's a bit of both, isn't it? I mean, there's definitely benefit to you, right?
Yeah,
because you'd rather be, and when we're talking about tag, we're talking about a physical electronic tag that
you get that nice deal. Scouse Rolex.
But that's only up until your halfway point. That the tagging stops at your halfway points, only for that bit of early. But most people would rather be out in the community on tag than they would in custody. So,
yeah.
I guess.
But they talk about extending it, aren't they? They're talking about people on any sentence under a year will just won't ever be custody. Well, I remember when I came out, they were talking about that. Yeah, any sentence under 12 months, it wasn't like a violent crime, was never going to be custodial. You just automatically go straight onto tag.
Since then, we've had, like, you know, a new justice secretary and...
It was that plonker that said, if there is still a drug problem in prisons in 1 year, I will quit.
Yeah.
Who said that? Someone said that?
He said something along those lines, and then mysteriously, like, 11 months later, he sort of stepped aside and someone else came in, so he didn't have to.
Yeah.
I mean...
But going back on what Claire said, a lot of people do fuck the tag off because they think...
By choice.
Yeah, I know some people that say, fuck the tag, I'll just ride the rest of the sentence because I feel like they feel like when they're out on the tag...
There'll be too much pressure.
Yeah, there's too much pressure and more chance of them breaching. So they think, fuck the tag, let me just ride it here, come out and be on license, that way I'm free.
And then you're, yeah.
Because some people feel limited when they're on tag. They feel like, I can't manoeuvre.
It is, and I think that the perception can be that it'll be great because you're released, but actually it is hard.
Yeah, it is hard.
Which we'll move on to about the reality of it. But no, so I can understand.
Yeah.
I can understand how that happens.
And it's like that thing again, taking the power away from them. You're in control.
You're making a choice.
But you know, so we said, so I think getting into it, it's funny that we're saying about how early you get given those days. So you think, like, almost from like day one, you're like, right, I know. But I remember I was saying to you, wasn't I, that Boats, that in that initial bit, you're like, right, you get given that bit of paper and you're like, right, that's it. But you really have to fight that urge to think about release. Even though I wasn't on like a really long sentence, but 9 months is still, you know, when you do those dates, you're like, right, bang,
nine months is your midpoint.
End of July. So for me, my tag date was like the 29th of July, 18.
Which was 9 months. So it's nine.
Which was 9 months. I was sentenced in October. So actually, it was last week was my 2 year anniversary of being sent
away. Anniversary.
Yes, guys. I was hoping when are you bringing out the cake.
I was actually the one who said happy anniversary to you earlier, Rob.
It's true.
That was lovely of me to remember, wasn't it?
And also, I shouldn't be getting the cake. We haven't touched on the fact.
Well, exactly.
Boats should be getting the cake because he's now a free man. We're talking about end of sentence. Yeah. You've just gone past your big date. You're now a free man. Congrats, mate.
Thank you, mate.
You're one of them now, mate.
Beaming.
You're one of them, guys. Yeah.
To be fair, it didn't really make a difference because I wasn't going to breach while I was on license anyway.
Good point.
Easier said than done, though.
What's the rules on this now? Because I'm now the only serving prisoner in this podcast.
You just have to just...
What are the rules on this?
Keep your nose
rules
clean.
Rules about what? Yeah.
That's why you two are on that sofa and I'm here on my own. Exactly, I feel quite isolated.
Yeah. Just keep your nose clean.
Right, we're talking about preparing for release, then we'll celebrate.
But I think that's it. What I was saying was that you really have to fight that urge to look at that. Because 9 months is still quite a long time. You know, you've had a baby.
It's a bloody long time.
Imagine 9 months in days as well. That's fucking mad as well.
Right? Exactly. So you're there going, and then you're like, right. So you've got to really fight that urge to think about release because it's like... so far off that that gets you down, because then you're like, fuck. So you sort of have to just focus on the here and now in that first bit. But I said to you, I don't know about you, but that gets progressively harder to do.
Right.
Especially like, no one really talks to you about your release there, but as soon as you start getting near, I mean, there's limited things to talk about in there anyway. So when anyone gets like nearer the end of their sentence, that starts to creep into.
And it must cause some tensions, because some.
I think it does. When you get some people who go around like bragging about, oh, I'm going home soon. And in my head, I think, just don't do that. It's quite an insensitive thing to do, because other people are doing different sentences. But also in terms of, when do you start to think about your release? It's like, you see people going home every day. So even I remember from being where my cell was, I could hear the gate in the morning. I could hear people saying, I could hear like the gov saying, well, all the best, or people leaving, or you could hear people laughing and you'd see them walking. And I remember watching people walk up the walkway thinking, fuck, they're going home. They're actually going to the real world again. And I think when that happens, you start thinking, it's nearly my time, it's nearly my time, whenever that time is. So I think that's another thing that I used to do. Like, where your cell was, did you used to watch people? Yeah, I used to proper watch people walk up
the bags and stuff.
Like, you could see like the spring in their step. Like,
yeah.
I think I ran, you know. I think I actually ran.
To the door.
I think, and I'm busy. Sorry,
yeah, but no, because I had a lift waiting for me, so that's why I ran.
Sounds quite busy to me. But yeah, but you're saying that it does create tension. And mine was awkward, because I had, you know, Al, my co-defendant, was in there with me, who had a longer sentence. And I think I've mentioned before, but I think, you know, day to day, that was a bit awkward, like whenever it came up, but it didn't. But then as it got nearer the end of the sentence, I did find it difficult. And we chatted a little bit about it, but it was clearly difficult. Mm. And he was really good. He didn't, you know, I don't think he held it against me. You know, without going into the intricacies, he was good. But it, like,
I'll ask him that.
I'm sure we'll get him on at some point and we can talk to him about it. He'll actually go, no, I just sat there going, what a prick. Yeah. But no, I think he was good. But it was difficult. It's difficult because I'm there going, like, you sort of have that bit like, yeah, you're happy to be going, but then you don't want to rub it in. Like, the guy's got, he was looking at another 2 years, and you sort of go,
it's hard because you're happy. You're happy, but you don't want to show you're happy, because it's quite a weird thing. You don't want to come across arrogant to anyone. Because some people do get beaten up for
one wrong comment. Yeah. It's the kind of thing that would make someone, you say that to the wrong person.
Someone could stitch you up or make you do longer time. Like, it's anything can happen in there. So it's quite
people can get quite bitter about it. Especially, you know, you think about guys doing long, long sentences. Yeah. You know, people with like, you know, especially in Wandsworth, you had people there, you know, on remand, staring down the barrel of not even being given 10, 15 years. Yeah, that happened. So that, you know, exactly. In a lot of those places, you've got to be really careful, and it creates tension with other people, and then I think it also makes people act funny as they lead towards it. You know, within themselves, you know, there's a real anxiety that builds. I found that, you know, even after 9 months, and I was in a really good position in that I knew I was going out, my family were really supportive of me, that I knew they were going to support me when I got out, so I had a lot of those big tensions removed. But still there's this weird, like, it is like in the pit of your stomach for no real reason every now and then. You just be like, just anxious about getting out.
Even like, there was a guy on our wing who the whole sentence, the whole of his body used to be bragging, saying, I'm going home, I'm going home soon. Literally a week or so before, he just went in his cell, just stayed in his cell. He didn't really want to come out. And I think there was probably issues on the outside that he was coming to terms with, that he had to get back to. Because really, when you're in jail, you're sheltered from everything. Yeah, it's not real. Like, you don't pay, there's no stresses of bills and stuff like that. So when you go out, it's like, fuck, I've got to start earning money. I've got to start, like, proper responsibilities are going to start coming again.
I think that's a big part of it. That hit the nail on the head.
That's why people go back. Because you don't have to pay bills. You get fed. Like,
in a lot of ways, it's stress-free. I think, I say that. I think I found it was stress-free. And then you do have that build-up. Like, you know, like, I was at a stage in my life where, you know, look, we've talked about it before, about, you know, and that sort of life moving on outside the bubble. And all your friends are out there. And we've talked about, you know, people getting married, people having kids, people getting promotions, people doing well at work. There's that kind of stuff. And then I'm like, shit, I'm going to come out and I don't have a job. I'm going to be in my early 30s. I'm single and all that kind of stuff. And I think all of that stuff combined suddenly, you know, starts to dawn on you, and you can shut it out. And then as that date looms, there's a real, like, you know, obviously it's great and on paper you want to get out, but it's so widespread. It's so common to see people start to, you know, praying out a bit about it. And people do deal with that differently. Some people sort of deal with it well and can process it, and some people, I think, really understandably struggle with that. And you said, like we said, there were guys that we were like quite good mates with in there. There was a guy I worked with in the gym in Rochester. quite good mates with him. And I think we sort of knew his release date was coming up. It wasn't like a complete secret, but we didn't know when. Then literally one day we got up and we were like, oh, yeah, where's Lee? And he'd just gone. He was out. He'd been released, didn't tell anyone. And went. And that's, I think, how some people deal with it. I think also you've got to consider I'm, you know, I committed a crime, but I'm not what you would call maybe from a criminal background. So, I mean, I think for some people that are and really want to make a change in their life, they probably do it because they want to make a, you know, they want to be tied to people in that world. And so I think they want to make a clean break. So, you know, they don't want to be tempted. They don't want people to come and try and contact them on the app and go,
I think that's quite rude because you build a bond with people. So if someone kind of swerves you, say like if me and you were pals on the wing and you just fucked off without telling me, I'd feel quite offended. Yeah, but so obviously I do understand that.
But also it's understandable you feeling like, because you do, it's not like
you've invested.
You make genuine friendships with people in there. You've invested time with them.
Yeah.
You've helped get each other through.
Yeah.
Like you might help that person get through a difficult time.
Yeah.
And then it's like getting ghosted. It's like something like they suddenly just fuck you off and it's a bit like, well, what have I done? You know, I think that's,
because even
like, both quite understandable emotions.
Yeah, because even like the first time I went to jail, I thought, like, obviously you get close to people and you really think they're your friends and you take numbers and stuff like that. I remember even once someone had to say to me, one of the older boys, he said, never give your address out. I was like, yeah, write me giving your address out. And he was like, never give your address out. He was like, these people from Adam. And it's true though, like looking back, it's silly because these people could do anything. They could send people to your house and whatnot. But you genuinely, you're so naive at first. But obviously the second time,
a bit wise to
him. Yeah, a bit wise, but sometimes
just people gave out my phone number.
If people that I didn't really want to talk to asked me for my number, I'd be polite and I'd give them Rob's number instead of mine. So that was easy.
But again, I didn't get many phone calls, mate, so I'm not sure how good of mates they really were.
Your phone might have not been working.
Maybe they were just being polite asking for your number.
But they didn't have to ask me. Maybe, who knows?
No, but it's true. There is that weird, it's almost like being back at school kind of dynamic. It's that weird, like,
I bumped into an old school friend on the tube and we had to speak to them for like 20 minutes. The end of it was like, do we exchange numbers now? Like, neither of us really wanted to, but like, who's going to be the...
Did you do it?
No.
Fair play.
Yeah.
But that's what social media is for. Like, what's your Insta? Like, what's your Insta or Facebook and stuff? You definitely got Facebook. 100% you got Facebook.
I just give out my Twitter handle, mate.
You probably do.
What were your family like in the lead up to release? Were they like super excited or were they nervous?
That's one thing as well. Even like when I used to have visits from people and stuff, or people would be like, oh, you're coming home soon. In my head, I used to be like, chill out. Like, it's,
I
don't know what it is. It's like you start thinking, yeah, I know, but I didn't like getting reminded.
Right.
I don't know why.
Like pressure?
I don't know where it was. I remember when I had visits and people would be like, are you home soon? You're home soon? Or even on the wing when people would say, are you home soon? I'd be like, yeah, good. I don't know whether it was maybe...
No, I think it's a really good idea.
Becoming humble because you didn't want to brag or because you were scared. I don't know what it was.
And well, also HGC, I'd get it can be like taken
I'd get it
away.
So, I wasn't so worried about that.
You didn't, right.
But I was more like... But for me, I think I found it difficult. Like, I had friends like coming in like 3 months before I got released going, oh, you're out soon.
And you're like, 3 months isn't that soon for me right now.
It's dog years in here. I was, I'm like three. Yeah. I'm like... 3 months is not soon.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the same. And you like, I didn't really like talking about release.
Do you think that's because of that? You become so humble in jail because you don't want to brag around people.
Yeah, that sets the tone. Yeah,
when people say, oh, you're out soon, aren't you excited? I used to be like, yeah. But I wasn't excited.
You didn't go.
You're not really excited. Obviously, you're excited because you don't want to be in jail. But for me, I was like, I don't know.
You almost like don't want to jinx it or something, don't you?
I think that's too much.
It's like mad, kind of weird psychology behind.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't want to talk about it too much, or don't want to panic because it might not happen. You just sort of, you are literally in the mindset of keep your head down, one day at a time, just grinding through. I think that's often how you get through it.
Yeah. What was the one thing you're most looking forward to? That's clean.
One thing.
Yeah, that's clean. Chucky, you're going to say something busy, like going for a jog or something. I wouldn't be surprised if you said that.
That would be in my top
going
five.
For a walk. Going for a walk.
No, food. I think food is my big one. I wanted a decent meal. Like, steak, nice steak and chips or something.
I'm busy. Yeah, food.
Okay, what were you looking
for? Well, she said clean, so food.
Okay, well, you've given the same answer as me. You can't go, you're busy, and then give the same answer as me.
We have food. I'll say food. I'll stick with you.
It was nice for your friends and family to know that that was a priority for you.
Actually, nah. Seeing your loved ones, seeing the people that actually had your back.
Cheesy, come on, mate. Give you a real answer.
What were you not looking forward to?
But not looking forward to is a difficult one. I think what I was not looking forward to was the never-ending quest, like the awkwardness. Like people going like, oh, what do you do? Or like, so like, what are you up to now? Like that kind of stuff I think was difficult.
It's funny though, it's like an elephant in the room. When someone's known you've gone away and they want to say it, and you just think, just say it, like, oh, how have you been? You know where I've been. Don't ask where I've been. Just talk to me.
Yeah.
It's quite awkward.
But yeah, I think you do think about that a bit. You obviously, I think, yeah, you. I probably didn't think so much on the way out about what I didn't want. You are just focused on the bits, the obvious ones: food, sex, like, yeah, jog in the countryside.
And do you think prison helped? Not prison in general, your whole sentence, I think, but like, did the prison help in any way for your preparation for release?
No.
They make you do that bullshit, that steps of the gate thing, isn't it?
You did a little course, but that's more about you trying to get you to reflect on your crime and not think about like the impact your crime had. But in terms of like prepping you for what it's going to be like readjusting out.
I mean, you can't even like apply for benefits while you're
no.
in custody, stuff like that. I mean, it's...
So that's my thing. I think we're not lined up for a sec about the actual logistical process of being, you know, what being released is like. But essentially, you get loads of people who get lumped out on the street with 50 quid in their pocket and not much of a plan, not knowing what to do. And like you said, you touched on, I was really lucky. I appreciate it. I'm really lucky that I was able to fix up some work or at least an interview for some work before I got out. Like that's really hard to do. And it's a funny one actually that. In your probation meetings, all they give a fuck about is whether you're working or not. You go in and they go, how are you doing? You still working? You go, yep. And their eyes glaze over. But so that's, they know that's the most important thing. There's some ridiculous stat that people that get into work when they get released, you're 70% more like or less likely to reoffend. Yet they let you do it. It's so hard to fix up some work before you get out. You're suddenly has, right, you're out, go and work. And it's like, well, I've got to eat. I've got to live. And now you've given me... £46, I think we'd figured out is like
I was going to say, talk me through your last moment. You had something to say about your last night.
Yeah, so my last night. So obviously, like, there's like, you're fixing up, you're packing up your cell and stuff. I think I actually gave you my CD player, Boats. You're welcome. You never said thank you for that.
No, you Alex had it.
Well, he probably took it off you.
No, he had.
But I remember leaving it for you outside your door.
He said to me, "I've left you. Think, get it off, Alex." That's what you said.
You're never gonna see that again.
I got it off Alex, but you didn't give it to me.
I told Alex it's for you.
So yeah, but he could have said, nah, he said me.
Posh Mafia are true to their word, mate. So anyway, we sorted all that stuff. You're packed up. So you give away stuff for people that, like, there were some, like, so I remember giving some clothes to people because they didn't have clothes or whatever. So
what, your gear? your clubber?
Very fashionable. It's in demand. I had a lot of requests for those slazzy shoes. But you got a little bit there. So I packed up, you go away, you say your goodbyes because you get released on the morning before everyone else. So you're not actually going to say goodbye to everyone. So that last bit before you get banged up that last night, you're sort of trying to say goodbye to people. Boats is out trying to give my phone number to anyone that will listen. And then you're there. But so I got back into my cell, like pretty much nothing in there and just like, right, so this is 5 o'clock. And I went to turn my TV on and it's fuzzy. And then I looked at the aerial and Al and Barry had thought it'd be good to remove the little adapter bit. They'd taken that off. So I had no TV for the last bit. And that's, I had like, no, I'd given no CD player. So I had no radio, no TV. That is honestly the longest 14 hours of my life, just lying on my bed, staring at the ceiling.
Could you sleep in that level?
No. And again, you're buzzing because you're like, you're really, really like just anxious about
adrenaline.
A mix of adrenaline, anxious, you're excited. Your fucking head is literally spinning. And then you saw, so I'm just lying there.
Just eating all counting down the minutes.
I've eaten all my canteen. I had nothing to eat. I'm hungry. It's honestly, I mean, it's bizarre. And then I think I eventually got to sleep at about 2 a.m. I don't know. I had no clock. So I had nothing. So you're literally lying there. It's like never ending. Pretty tight. And so, yeah. And then, yeah, you saw, I eventually got some sleep and then obviously woke up. I suspect was probably about 5 a.m. judging by the amount of time I had to wait before my door was unlocked. and you are, that is just like you're up, you showered, you shower, you just sat on the edge of your bed, pacing up and down, looking out the window, trying to see are the govs coming down, because obviously you can see the morning shift for govs coming.
And then there's the delay, and you're like,
but you are anxious. You're genuinely like,
you know,
it's mad. Boats is likes to paint himself as a cool customer, so I'm sure he'll tell us he was asleep. Boats is about to tell us they had to wake him up. am I being released today? I didn't know.
No, to be fair, I did sleep. Obviously, I slept. I made sure I had something decent to watch the night before, and I slept and I woke up, and then, as you do, just went. It's quite simple.
Ran
and straightforward.
The door that you just told us.
To be fair,
when I said my goodbyes, and then, because obviously I had someone picking me up, I just wanted to jog to the front because it was cold.
Because you were waiting for a lift, or it was cold?
I'd given away a lot of my clothes as well, so I was wearing a t-shirt. So I
didn't want to sprint up to reception.
I didn't
want to
walk down the runway, so I ran.
Runway.
I ran.
And then, like, literally walking out the gate, you handed your plastic bag with all of your belongings in.
I didn't have no belongings. I gave
nothing with you.
Yeah,
you gave Dave your big green baseball cap.
Red baseball cap, sorry. Yeah, I didn't leave with anything.
Nothing.
Yeah. But you do, yeah. I had mine plastic bagged up. I remember very clearly walking up the ramp. H-wing's at the bottom of the prison, so you got to walk up to reception. And Al and Barry's cells were both facing out, so you're obviously getting a torrent of abuse.
I was banging the window.
But it's like an awkward kind of like, you feel a bit like that donut, like when the prisoner gets on Air Force One, you've got to turn around and wave to no one in particular.
Yeah.
It's like an awkward kind of
part
like
celebrity.
Yeah. And then, but you're on your Todd walking up, and you're also conscious that everyone else in every other window is looking at you going, who's this dickhead?
Yeah.
Waving like an idiot as he walks up the ramp. And you
put your side parting in, ready to go home.
In my Sunday best.
And then you get your very generous discharge grant from prison.
Yeah, you get the fund. You get to reception. They process you. You have to sign 400 forms saying.
This is what I've brought to the table. My fact about the discharge grant.
Yeah.
You brought nothing to the table.
No, I got the sum right, basically, nearly.
Yeah, but not my fact. So, okay, yeah. you were closest to the sum that you get the prison give you.
It was 46.
46 quid.
Pounds. Yeah,
46. Plus whatever money you've saved if you're a diligent little saver like me.
Well, but that's hard to do. You have to be sent in money to be able to save money.
Incorrect. I'd say incorrect. I'd saved it up from my £6 a day working in the gym.
You're distracting from my fact.
Yeah. No, right. So that's a good fact. So the government
£46
does give you some cash, some walking around
which
money.
Which is meant... But you also get a travel grant.
No.
You can apply for it, yeah. So I was... We know you were running for your lift that you were getting, mate. You didn't need one.
But if you're getting on public transport, anyway, you can apply for a travel grant. But £46 is to last you until you've either sorted benefits or somebody has given you some
which
money.
Which could be a week. Not many people sort benefits in 25 minutes.
No.
So I don't think...
That sum of £46 has been the same since 1996.
You know,
yeah, you were born in a bunch.
No, I was born in 1981. That's busy that you nearly got it right as well.
So that's which pathetic.
Is, yeah. So that's sort of like, yeah, I mean, that process is really weird because you're in a bit of a daze. You're up, you're away from the lads. You're suddenly taking to reception. They're like, sign this. There's weird stuff they're hitting you with, like you're not allowed to own or operate a firearm for 5 years. You've read the conditions of your bail. I'm not allowed to be a director of a limited company, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then, yeah, they're like, literally, like, sign this.
And then fuck you off and just open the gate.
And then it's a real anticlimax, actually, because they're like directing, and you're thinking there's like, I mean, they're obviously making the same shit gag they make 300 times, don't come back. And then you get up, but
that's
then
not
it's
a
just,
gag, mate, that's just see you back.
Genuine advice.
Is that superstition not to look back? Because people always say, don't look back. I was fuming. Listen to this story. Oh, my God. The person who picked me up, I said to them, just park, like, so I don't have to look back. Because for some reason, I thought, let me not listen. Because I thought the first time I went to jail, did I look back? Is that why I came back?
That was where you went wrong,
and
mate.
And then
you think that was the problem?
That was it.
It might have been that. That
was nothing it. To do with your action.
Nah.
Did you and put that in your mitigation at sentencing?
I didn't. I should have.
I should have.
But then
the person
the person who picked me up was parking facing the prison. So when I sat in the car, I was facing the door. I was like,
turn around.
Fuck. We actually had an argument because of that as well. We actually had an argument. I was miserable that journey. I was fuming. I thought, fuck's sake.
Sorry, that's first time or second time?
The second time. The second time I've looked.
So you're due to go back again, according to that?
No. Well, according to that, well, that's not true. It's bullshit.
You've broken the spell.
Yeah, I've broken the spell.
Second time reverse.
So you got a lift.
Got a lift.
That was nice.
Yeah.
Did you get a lift?
Well, I did, yeah. So I was saying, so you sort of get, it's like, we got processed really quickly. There are only two people being released my day. So we actually got out, I think, like half an hour before I was expecting to.
That's they don't give you of.
Exactly. They don't, I mean, yeah. I mean, the prison unexpectedly early, efficient. Yeah, it's the only time in my entire time anything happened before it was meant to when I was there. And so they got me out. But again, it's like another one. When you're trying to arrange that, like a lift, they're like, what time do we come and collect you? And I was like, oh, I don't know. Then you're like, what time do I get out?
Busy, what you said, go on. What did you do? When you got released?
Well,
this is so busy. Go on.
Wait, hang on. We'll let the audience decide how busy it is, because I think it was practically mine. Anyway, I got out early. So you get to the front gate and they make you check your number, and then literally they're like, oh, you're out. And that is a weird feeling, because suddenly you're like, all right, I'm out. Like there's, and you're just outside in a car park in Rochester outside the wall.
That you've never seen before.
You've never seen that before.
That's interesting. That's
when you're not familiar with it. You're like, oh, and I had like... Three duffel. They give you like prison issue like bags. So I, that stuff. So I've got like three bags, and then I'm out, and it's raining, and I'm like, well, I'm just stood in the rain, and like no one's there, and I was like, okay, well, where do I go? I don't know. Is there like a collection point? So I went and stood. I went in the car park. There was like a separate building. So I went and stood under the. They had a cover, so I was under a doorway. Yeah, I was like under the doorway. There's like no one around. This is like 9 o'clock on a Tuesday morning or something. Like pissing with rain, and I'm like, well, no one's here, so I'm like trying to look around for my aunt and uncle's car, couldn't see that.
And you've I've not got a phone,
so I'm like, well, I stood there for like 10 minutes, so I was like, well, I don't think they're here, so I was like, well, maybe there's like a separate, this is maybe might just be for prison staff or something, and they can't get in here, so I was like, I'll just go for a wander down the road, so I like walked down the road for like 5 minutes. Still nothing there.
McDonald's.
So I went, there was BP garage, so I went there. And I had to go, look, just been out of prison. I don't have a phone. I need to ring someone. So I had their number. So I but the lady by the thing, let me borrow their phone. I had to ring them.
That was lovely. She probably gets that a lot.
Pardon?
That BP garage probably get that a lot.
And she boats. Boats.
She probably sells 46 quid's worth of alcohol to done, a lot folks? Of people.
What would I have done? Would
made a fire, send up smoke signals.
I would have just waited, to be fair.
Well, you're an idiot, mate.
How long you was in jail? Surely you've got patience. Huh? Just to wait.
Your patient goes out the window the day you get out the fucking wall, doesn't it? You're just like, I want to get on with it. I want to get out. Get gone.
The question is, so you ring them and where are they?
They were about to arrive on time, but obviously I'd got out half an hour early.
Busy.
Yeah, well, I didn't have my watch. My nice Casio well digital done. Watch I'd given to Alex, so I didn't have a concept of time at that point. But yes, so you're out. And then I was picked up, but then having your first contact with someone you're out on like a BP forecourt is
emotional. Yeah,
little bit of an anticlimax, you know, or just strange and just like but it was nice.
And did either of you guys, because so being having a standard determinate sentence, you knew that there would always be a point of automatic release, like whatever happened, you knew you were coming out.
Yeah.
Did you know anyone serving an indeterminate sentence who had to go through parole process?
Yeah, I knew quite a few people that were doing life.
And were you with them when they were going through parole, like in the build up to parole, as to how they were feeling about their release, or you didn't really see that bit?
I didn't really see that bit, but I've heard of people that when they're nearer the time, they just change. They get quite anxious, because I think it's the fear of not knowing what's going to happen. Obviously, going up, it's such a change. So a lot of people used to play up. A lot of people used to play out. Obviously, like Rob said, that some people would do things to make them be able to stay. But
like on top of all of the having to plan for the release, they're planning for something which actually is quite theoretical.
They don't even know. Yeah, that's
and then they've got
really
to prove to someone that they can come out.
Yeah, there was a guy, again, in Rochester, was on an IPP, I think, and was going for, when we were there, he went for his, I think, third, he'd been declined, been rejected, two or three times, and he went for one, I remember him coming back and he was, you know, that sort of, he was, oh, they were, you know, they were being pricks. They were really probing. I don't think I got it. Oh, and he was really bitter. And then actually he was accepted. Oh, he was released and stuff. So you sort of see that like kind of roller coaster of emotions and stuff. I mean, it's, I don't know what to compare it to. It's like, you know, people come out of an exam and they go, oh, shit. You know, it's that kind of like.
But the exam's about their freedom. It's a bit mental.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and when you're dealing with someone, you know, with a family and, you know, had already been held for 6 years longer than he thought he was going to be. And, you know, you don't know the context of that, but you just see that person inside of him and just seeing that, yeah, that kind of release. And then, you know, but then it's like he was going to be released and then it was like, oh, I've got to be released into a hostel, like a halfway house. And it's like dealing with that. And so, yeah, you do see the real like, yeah, roller coaster that goes into that kind of stuff. And I think it's obvious that, you know, for us having fixed term, fixed certainty removes a lot of that. And yeah, I was pretty fucking pleased to get out, to be honest. I was.
Don't blame you.
It wasn't, well, you know, tag wasn't ideal, but I'd taken that over staying inside.
Well, we'll talk about that because we're going to come on to freedom, or is it?
The next part, the bit after me being reunited on a BP4 court, busily making a phone call.
Yeah. But rewind, actually, because I've put a note that you wanted to talk about home leave.
I didn't have any home leave day release. I think it's definitely worth, I think, touching on, because you get, obviously people get literally day release. So they're allowed out for a day, they get an afternoon out and they can go to the shops, their parents or family.
Not from Rochester.
Yeah.
Yeah, from Rochester. I had day releases and rolls.
Yeah, so people were going out on those. And I think that's I guess, if you're asking the question about what the prison do to help do that, I think the system is designed, that is designed to help you try and re-acclimatise being out. So you're not standing out the door, you've had a day, you've had a weekend, you've had 3-4 days back with your family, living like a relatively normal life. And then, you know, so that once you're out, you know, released out of the gate, it's not, you're not like, right, this is the first time I've encountered my family or the real world. And you'd get, you know, I spoke to one of our mates from Rochester, was out, Quaddy got his first release and he was like, he went to Blue Water, I think, or something, on his like afternoon. And this is a guy who'd been in on a longest sentence. And, you know, I remember chatting to him. He had my number, so he just rang me and he was like, oh, mate. I was like, how are you doing? What are you up to? And he's like, yeah, I'm out. It's my first day out. And this is like his first day out in 14 years. And I was like, how's it feeling? He was like, fucking weird. I was like, what are you doing? He was like, going to go Blue Water, get a Nando's. Do you know what I mean? So it's like weird like that stuff. But it's, I suspect, you know, looking at that, I think it does help because that first time out is weird. So if you can get that out and then, you know, that security, weirdly, that security of knowing you're going back to prison. Ah, right, that's it. Okay. And then, so I think that.
That used to be a lot more frequent. Rottle used to be a lot more frequent and then they made it a lot harder to get. So that must be one of the few places that's not a Cat D that's given out. That's very unusual.
Yeah, DCATs get it loads and stuff. And I guess that a lot of those are out working.
People just flood the jail, innit? People just come back with. A bunch of men,
innit? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, anecdotally, I know people that definitely came back with bits and pieces while I was in there. So that whether that's how they clamped down on it, I don't know. Ruining it for all the good eggs.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to talk about, freedom.
We're now out.
Next
what
time.
What happens next?
Yeah. After the first night. Congratulations on making it out of the gates.
Yeah. Congrats, Boots. Congrats, Boots. You're out, fully out now.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Nice one, guys.
Thank you.
Hi, guys. It's Rob here. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Just to give you a quick reminder that if you haven't already, to subscribe to make sure you get the new episodes as they come out every Monday and leave us a review with any of your feedback wherever you listen to the pod. You can also get us on our Twitter and Instagram accounts, which are at Banged Up Podcast. You can send us any questions you want for our weekly Q&A and also catch some other bits and pieces like excerpts from my diary. Okay, thanks very much. Catch you soon.